Flink. Full in the Flink. Full in the Flink Tech Show.
Good evening, and welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. All you scabs. Dan Washko here. We got a full house tonight, because Alan's back, Link's here, and I'm sick, but I'm still here, because I have to be. It's my house.
Because Dan's always sick, mentally.
All right. Sick. Do some shout-outs to all my
homies.
All my homies working at the Wawa. Register back making the hoagies. To Randy K, lost in Bethlehem, and Joe S is driving taxi to find him. Randy P, who cares where he is? And Fingle Finn, hope you're out of the pit and washing off in the bathtub.
What's up, yo?
Yo. Ouch.
Yo.
To Linux Chick out there in Arizona who ain't listening anymore.
That's right. We gotta send her some mail and get her listening to the show anyway.
And so. Send her a show.
Yeah.
And to her sweetie pie who makes the best rice and beans.
Dame's
Jose.
Dame's thinking Jose the rice and bean dude.
Yeah.
And he makes a mean lasagna too, like that.
And
lasagna
those pork chops are really good too. He makes a mean everything.
Tell you what.
Food was pretty good when we were over there.
And to all you people who are going back to school. This week.
I'll go back to school for you and get you any grade you want, and all you have to do in return is go to work for me and pay my bills.
And then to my eardrums, who will be gone by the end of the show again.
Is it real loud again?
Dan and the headphones you can hear across the room.
No matter what I do, I can't adjust the volume. If I turn the volume down,
you sure can. You just grab a hold of the earpiece in one hand and the cord in the other hand and separate.
I need to get the volume on the But we're going to do our promo. But before that, Lincoln Allen, do you think you're faster than a worm?
Faster than a worm, no way.
Well, we'll find out when we get back.
All right.
All right.
Only if I start the promo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rum, rum, vroom.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel #TechShow. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, we're back.
Yep.
And we are here on Wednesday, August 25th.
Yep.
And it didn't rain yet today.
No. Amazingly.
Surprising.
And there are no storms predicted for tonight, so I hear. Which is like the
first
time.
Not until like Monday, I think.
Yeah, but this is a momentous thing. This is the first Wednesday when there's not even a thunderstorm predicted since, like,
we have had a cloud running over our head for the last couple of months
here. It's been like winter, you know, since we haven't had a storm on Tech Show night.
How about that, huh? And we're all here tonight, too.
That's right.
So must be hell freezing over. As we count down to, what, three more shows total?
Three more shows.
Three more shows until...
Only Tiki Bar Run.
Three.
Tiki Bar Run.
And speaking of that, that mystical, magical 50th episode.
The 50th episode.
I have taken that entire week off for vacation. So I propose if you other two weenies can get some time off like that Thursday, we could really go out and, you know, we could do Horse tech night? Show night right. You know what I mean? We could, like, come out from here after the tech show and, you know, at least go get a steak somewhere or something like that, you know?
Works for me. I can get off next day.
And invite the general populace or something.
What's the date on that?
Something
16th?
Or other. Ah! Woo! Don't do that, man!
There it goes again.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that...
What is it?
It's 47,
my wife's not paying attention because she'd have
it right
there.
This is the 47th show, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so that
if
would be...
If you give me a second, I will
48th
tell you
would be next week.
Specifically.
49th would be Thursday, September 16th.
So the 16th will be the 50th show.
No, 15th will be the 50th show.
It is.
I'm sorry, yes, 15th.
Yeah, because I said Thursday is the day that he's talking about taking off.
Works for me.
Is that what I said?
Well, that Thursday you said.
Are you sure that's what I said?
You said that Thursday.
Are you sure?
I don't know. Is that what you said?
I think. Was I there when I said it?
I wasn't. The 15th.
I can't get the freaking calendar loaded.
Oh, are you trying to get your calendar
Dan's
loaded?
Dan's freaking network connection is so cruddy here. I'm telling you.
No, you're talking about the wireless.
Yeah, well, it's dead. Wireless is on your network, dude.
Degrades over time. You having a problem
it's
with the wireless?
Stinky.
Knock on the table here. No, not yet.
That's why I provided cable that you could just connect right into it.
But you know
but
what?
But you chose not to.
It's stinky. All right, because what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to load up WN Wave, which is a window maker dock app doohickey.
You could have just typed Cal
just
in the terminal there. It would bring up a
WM Wave. If you don't have this, if you run wireless stuff, you don't have WM Wave, and what's the other one? WM...
Dial?
What WM Wifi. Which I'm also going to start up right now. If you do not have those two little dock app doohickeys and you run any wireless stuff at all on your laptop or whatever, you need to get them because they're really cool. Little square dock apps. They tell you link quality and the whole bit. And here's a damn stinky network. I am sitting 3 feet away from his wireless router.
You're connected to the one downstairs.
All right, well, still, where's it underneath? Well, it's right underneath me. You know,
No, it's not underneath you. It's down over there.
I got it.
You're going through one, two,
I get
through two walls
to get to it. Last time when I was here, I had a 42 or 43% connection. Right now, I'm at like a 26%.
Do you want me to reboot it?
You're stinky. Fix them crazy little stuff, man, I'm telling you. Anyway, now I finally got my calendar up. I can tell you precisely that the tech show in question, the 50th tech show, is the 15th of September. Even though, you know, the other two guys already told you that, now you know for sure because I told you and it's on my calendar.
Do you want me to restart it for you?
No, man, because I'm going to lose my stuff for the rest of the friggin' show.
It only took 30 minutes
to get it up. Yeah, I'm going to get a dish at my house and I can use my own damn Wi-Fi from there or something.
All right.
I bring my wire connection.
Oh, see, in it, to Null says, isn't the 52nd show more significant? And the answer would be
no,
because we took 2 weeks off.
That's right.
Over to the
so the 50th show, 50th show is actually 52 weeks into our Lug Tech Show production.
Careers.
Could you call it the Lug Tech Show production?
Well, we're all like in the Lug. I guess it's just really the Linux Link Tech Show, but we all happen to be, you know, integral members of the
Linux
user group. And
that would be like saying, you know.
But it's not. I guess it's not really
Linux
part of the
Linux for kids was the log, because that's the only people who showed up.
Well,
it was.
With the exception of, you know, the nincompoop group.
You know, haven't checked in on that website lately. And we'll check it out in a minute. Oh, my God.
I'm beeping.
No, this can't be right.
What?
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking linuxforkids.org. That's not right.
That was like, what, their new site?
No, linuxforkids.org was not the domain they registered.
No.
Elf, what was it?
That was Linux for Kids USA or something like that.
That's
that
right. It's just like, is it Linux for Kids USA?
I thought it was something like that.
I have
it?
No
what
clue.
Was what was the one you registered?
My phone is dinking. Hang on. I registered.
Man.
He
comes here and
lvcfk.org. That's
yeah.
What I registered.
The one that they hijacked. Yeah, his phone's ringing, so he's got to answer his phone.
That,
well, I have the answer per se. I just want to see who it is.
Well, it's going somewhere. We'll find out where.
I got three calls.
Well, I guess before...
It must be important. I'll have to step out for just a second.
All right. Well, before... Well, there goes Link. Well, before...
He's just giving the microphone. You want to use my microphone? It's on that.
Before we...
I've got the long cord over here.
Alan, do you have anything to add?
No, not really.
No news? Nothing? You posted your blog twice this week.
I posted the blog twice this week.
What happened?
Let's see. I bought an LED sign to go along with my MP3 server, which was probably overkill since I probably could have done it with a nice little two-line LED or LCD display and gotten the same thing. But I just always wanted one of those LED signs with the traveling letters and the little animations, so... Got a couple of little scripts on there, and it goes in and grips what's playing on XMMS at the time, on and then broadcasts it up on the sign. It was a neat little thing to play with.
That's awesome.
But it was fun.
So it's actually working. It'll display the songs.
Yeah, it's every minute it pulls XMMS on it to see what's playing. I got a little cron job running on it, and it just grips the file that comes out of that. There's a program called XMMS. Easy for music. XMMS info, which it's basically you can use it for like websites if you want. If you want to always have what's playing on your website on it. But I'm using it for the sign here, so works pretty good.
Fantastic. Sounds like a lot of fun. You going to write up a how-to?
No. There wasn't really much of a how-to besides what's on my blog.
It's only sounding like fun because he was supposed to post pictures to his
blog. Well, the pictures will be coming as soon as I recharge the batteries on the camera.
It's a likely excuse. Oh, and by the way, I got my messages, and earth-breaking news is that
you're pregnant?
I actually do not need to have to stop and buy cat food on the way home. Thank you very much,
all right.
Dear.
The cats will survive?
I believe that she said that she actually found a rogue box of cat food floating around in the closet or something like that. So, if you're listening, Michelle, rest assured that I will not stop to buy cat food.
Got the message.
Yes.
All right. So
that, and I've got, you know, people barking at me from work that want to get their Linux box configured, which is kind of cool, but, you know. That was almost worth it.
The LVCFK.
Well, those are the messages you can actually
has a completely answer. New website. So if you want to breeze over there and check it out for yourself,
no,
it's all right. Of course, it's still done in front page, and but no, you got to go over there and check it out because I got to know. It's falling apart in my browser.
It's falling apart. Well, what are you using for your browser?
Firefox.
What's the URL?
LVCFK.org. And it's falling apart in my browser, and I keep getting this funky Java error plugin. Java VM.
Java VM that can only be viewed with the
right,
appropriate
plugin.
Right,
so obviously the site is designed.
It is a Windows kind of thing.
Microsoft for Microsoft-based browsers. I'm getting annoyed at this. You know, I got to say, and I doubt that he listens, or maybe he does or whatever, but if you're going to design a website and you're going to give away Linux-based computers, your website better damn well work in Linux.
You aren't kidding.
And that's just, that's pitiful.
It's sort of like falling apart, yeah.
Yeah, I am, you know, it's great what they're doing. Hey, more power to them, but if that's what your core audience is what you're looking to do, and build Linux-based computers for people and give them away, your website better work in Linux and work properly, and it better have...
I think my personal opinion is that if you are a technology-based organization, such as someone who deals specifically with computers, you should be able to design a website that does not blow up, period. In any browser, actually. I mean, you know, that's what we have standards for, right? W3C. They have standards. You don't need that. I mean, I don't see anything special on this page that would require...
A couple of tables.
A Java app. If they ditch some of the cruddy CSS and go with a couple of tables, it'll look much better. But that's just my opinion. And you know what they say, opinions are like buttholes. Everybody has one and they all stink.
Well, of course they do not pass the W3C validator. Well,
of course not. Right off the bat. In front page. You does cannot pass W3C when you code in front page. It's impossible. And if it were possible, it would be time to get something else than W3C.
But they did redesign their website. Bill Dunning. Now, it doesn't have anybody except for Randy and his wife in it that was in it when we were in it and were in it when we left, I don't think. What's interesting is I think Bill Dunning was LV, Lehigh Valley Computer Users Group. Somehow, I guess they all got back together.
Yeah. Something like that.
Fantastic.
God, all the pages fall apart.
Huh?
All the pages.
Dude, I didn't even look at the other pages.
I just going through them.
Well, what are you going to do, huh?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what I want. I have to change the topic because I'm dying to get the answer to this, and I'm hoping that maybe somebody listening to the show tonight will be able to provide one. I have what?
I was going to say, don't you have
the pages
Java
titled
installed?
New page one.
Me, no.
You don't have a Java plugin,
not
do you?
On my browser here, no. I never bothered to put one in there because, you know, it's worthless for my laptop. I don't have to have that kind of thing. But I'll tell you what I do have to have. I have to have a way to connect to my workstation at work from my workstation at home. Now, I have devised, and of course there's firewalls in between, right? I have devised various methods to do this. The first one was when my firewall at home actually was on my workstation at home. Forward an X-terminal, SSH with an X-terminal, forward an X-terminal. From my workstation at work to my workstation at home, would just pop up on the screen and I could do my thing. And that was cool. That worked for a time. And then I switched things around so that, you know, I have a legitimate server and firewall and everything in between. And now I simply use SSH tunneling to go from one machine to the other. Like I make an SSH tunnel from my workstation.
Right.
In reverse. It's reverse tunneling. SSH tunnel in reverse from my workstation to my server, and I grab a port on that server and forward it or attach it to, you know, through the SSH tunnel to a port on my workstation. So basically I'm forwarding port like, you know, 1234, and I'm forwarding off to port 23 on my workstation at work, which of course is the telnet port. So once I establish the connection, I can therefore go home and SSH to my server, and then from my server, any account on my server, I can simply type telnet space and the port number, 1234, whatever port it is that I use. And that just sends the telnet through that port, right to port, through the SSH tunnel, right to port 23 on my workstation at work, which is great. And it has been working for a long time. However, the frustrating part is this last week, and it may have been since I upgraded to, this is probably just coincidence, but since I upgraded my workstation to Slackware 10, I have noticed that it's not been working. It appears that the tunnel is getting squashed somehow, and I don't know if it's just been a really weekly long line of crappy internet connections or something, but what happens is the tunnel appears to get squashed, and when I telnet from my computer at home, my server at home, through the SSH tunnel, I get as far as the string where it says the escape character is bleh, and there's nothing that happens afterwards forever. I never get to a login prompt. Like, it's just connected.
Right.
You know, you are connected, blah, 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 blah. Your escape character is this. And it dies. It hangs right there indefinitely forever and ever and ever. And obviously that is just not going to work. And I've tried everything I can think of. And I really am running out of ideas. And I would appreciate if anybody else knows one to let me know. There just has to be a way to do this, and I don't understand what the problem is. You know, I don't understand. Even if the connection is getting killed somewhere along the line, it's not dropping from either end so that it's reestablished. I mean, I have a little script running. It checks a process table to see if that secure shell process is in there. If it isn't, it reruns
restarts
the connect
it up
screen. Yeah, it restarts it up again. But evidently, if it's dropping, it's never like dropping out of the process table. It's staying there forever. And I just don't get it. I don't know whether it's actually connected or it's not connected. Or it really makes absolutely no sense to me at all. And you know, I'm at a loss. But I need to have a way to do this, folks. I need to do this. The only other way that I can do something like that I can think of is to use some kind of a VPN software, which I really didn't want to have to piss with, because every time I look at those for Linux, they're talking about recompiling your kernel and you know, adding different crap to the PPP driver and your weird MTU settings and stuff like that. You know, I really don't want to piss with that. All I really want is a way to SSH or telnet to my computer at work.
And what do you say you get again? It stops where?
It stops right after it says you're connected. In fact, that I'll jump in and do it right now, see if I can. It says you're connected, and it gives you the escape string, and then it just hangs.
And you don't get an error message?
Nope.
Well, you're trying to tunnel back through again, right?
Right. I'm trying to telnet through my tunnel.
And this changed when you moved up to a more recent version of.
I don't know specifically, because like I don't have to use it very often, but when I need it, I need it to be running. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I really needed it, and it wasn't letting me do it. And the only thing that's changed is like I upgraded to Slack 10. On my workstation at work that it was connected to, but I don't see where that would be.
That shouldn't have been a problem there.
I don't see where that would be a big deal. This is what happens. It says, what I do is I on my server, I telnet localhost, and I use like port 11,000, right? I have that forwarded off to 23 on my workstation at work. So I log into my server, I see telnet localhost space 11,000. It says trying 127.0.0.1, localhost, right? Connected to localhost. Escape character is the control bracket, and it hangs there forever. It just stays right there and does nothing and looks at you mockingly.
And there's nothing in your message files or anything?
Not a damn thing. Nope. Never connects through. I don't know why. Don't know what the deal is with it. Whether the SSH is dropping or something. I get nothing anywhere. The only way out of it is, of course, you know, to control bracket out of it and do the quit thingy. And it's really quite frustrating, actually.
Now, what if you try and SSH to one of your other machines? Like,
what do you
mean? When we're running a different version of SSH on it.
I have tried it with protocol version 1 and 2 on two different machines, one running Slackware 10 and one running NetBSD.
Is it possible that they did something on your network end?
No. I checked that, too, and it's always been the same. The firewall rules are the same. Basically, my firewall rules at my company are whatever you want to send out, send out. Only nothing's getting back in without an established connection kind of thing, you know?
Right.
There are no incoming ports, so to speak, unless, of course, they're a return port from something that was initiated outbound. And, you know, a lot of companies are like that, and SARS has been like that as far as I can remember, which is fine. And, you know, I use that to my advantage by creating a secure shell tunnel, which, you know, establishes that kind of connection. That's not a problem. Unfortunately, it's just not working. I don't know why. It's really, really bugging me, and I cannot figure out the answer. And I see all the answers flying by on the IRC channel tonight, too.
Slow down, everybody people. Link can't read that fast. You know what?
Everybody else is stumped, too.
I'm going to have to listen to your complaint on the playback or your problem, because I'm still stuck on the CFK thing. And so I fired up Mozilla off of my workstation, okay, because I wanted to see what I was missing, and I have Java linked up. And I guess the only thing that's missing that we're missing by not having Java in our browsers, and this is what...
Rollovers.
Init to null has said something about a rollover button, and the only button I see that's a rollover button is, you know, that little box that had the CFK board in it? Well, like, okay. Randy, and that's what it is. And you go, and it just changes color when you move the mouse over top of it. And people, you don't need Java to do that anymore. It's a little thing called CSS. Now, I understand that Microsoft browsers don't support CSS the way they should, but at least they do support a rollover feature. All right? It's really easy to do instead of having to write some funky Java code. Now, maybe I'm missing something else here. I don't see any other rollovers going on. It's still falling apart in my browser. So maybe there's something else I'm missing. And as for your problem, Link, your SSH problem.
Your SOL, yeah.
So you try to tunnel back and you get... Is it possible the tunnel stuff changed with the new version of SSH and you're missing something there?
I don't see how. Yeah, I mean, that's... No, because I've tried it with NetBSD, too, and it exhibits the same behavior.
So now, if I were to connect into my workstation at work, do an SSH session back, and then I'll connect to my workstation over here, I should be able to tunnel through a telnet session.
Yeah.
So what I'm...
I mean, it still works for me. Like, I can set it up, and when I do that and set the SSH tunnel up and immediately go to my server and telnet back through the SSH tunnel, it works fine. But after an hour or something like that, nothing. I get, you know, it hangs on that, hangs on the escape characters, and it just stays there forever. I'd never get a login prompt. But
is
if
it
I do it right afterwards...
You're losing connectivity?
It might be, but if I'm losing connectivity, then why the hell doesn't it ever... Like, the SSH session appears to be still connected on both ends. And when I do the telnet thing to the local host at port 11,000, it says connected. You know what I mean? If I lost connectivity, what the hell is it connecting to? You know what I'm saying? It's a mystery.
You got me, man. I don't know.
Because
can you run it in debug mode?
I don't know.
Can you run SSH in debug
mode? I don't know
what
that'd tell me either. You know?
Well, maybe
if
you'll see
anything.
Something going on. Can you run? You would have to run SSH in debug mode, right?
Oh, wait. Oh.
If you run
what
it in
light bulb has gone
what
on.
What is CAD lock?
CAD lock what?
Because I just thought, like, maybe I'm telnetting to port 1000 and there's something that's supposed to be on there. Cadillac. That's what it says in the
Cadillac. Cadillac is a type of car, man.
No, Cadillac.
Driven predominantly by little old ladies down 78.
Something like that, yeah.
Cadillac. Computer aided drafting? Is it saying CAD? Space
C-A-D.
L-O-C-K?
No space. C-A-D-L-O-C-K. I don't know. It's a really... It's quite a mystery, and it's really pissing me off. Like I said, other than that, I got to figure out how to do some kind of VPN. So if anybody knows how to set up a VPN on a Linux box, please... an easy way to do it, please let me know. Because there's no way I'm going through, all kinds of confugulated kernel compiles and stuff just to get a damn VPN so I can get on a Microsoft network, you know. And my time is worth more than that. And I'll find a different way to do it. But if there's an easy way to set up a VPN...
where are you seeing Cadillac again?
In the services file. 1000 TCP Cadillac.
And it's on port 1000 or 11000?
11,000.
Why don't you just change it to another port?
Or was it 1,000? I don't know. Something like that.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't you connecting back to port 11,000?
Yeah, 11,000 is tunneled through to port 23 at work.
But nothing's on 11,000. So why are you looking at port 770? Cadillac's supposed to be on port 770.
I think it was port 1,000 on here, but I should have been looking at 11,000, so...
Why don't you try changing to a different port?
I did.
Didn't
I
make
set
a
it
difference?
Up? I set it up earlier this afternoon on 1433, and didn't make any difference. Same thing. Works fine for 5 minutes, and after that.
Do you have it do a ping thing across every couple of minutes? Try setting that up.
No, because then I have to push another port. You can't ping a telnet session.
That's true. I don't know what to tell you, man.
I don't know. I got to find something that's driving me crazy. There has to
be
a way.
Why don't you just have them open up port 22?
I'm trying. I can't get them. I don't know what they're afraid of. Like, ooh, 128-bit encryption. That's scary. Someone will get right in on that.
But yet they have Telnet open.
No.
They used to have Telnet. They close that down now?
No Telnet. They don't
so what
have
happens to the customers that used to want to get in?
That was a different part of the company that did that, had Telnet and FTP open. These guys don't have anything open. No inbound ports. They do have DMZ. And if I bitch for 2-3 months maybe I can get an account on the DMZ machine that I can get forwarded through inside the network.
So why don't they want to give you an account? Or why don't they want to let you...
What I want them to do is I want them to let, SSH traffic through. And that would be really freaking nice.
And they say they won't because...
Because they don't want to. No good reason.
They don't need a reason.
No good reason. It's a corporate thing, Somebody makes an arbitrary decision to do something stupid, and there you have it. They do that with a relative frequency.
I'm sorry to
just
hear
like
that.
They do, your work, I'm sure.
No,
they do
not
everybody's
really.
Work.
I make the decisions there. It's because you got to get in at the ground level, and you got to know.
Sure.
You got to like, well, I, you know, I need to do this. So
well, I was at the ground level of my company at one time, but then they were bought out by a big umbrella company. So that kind of nixed that whole thing. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this problem. I never had these problems when, you know, when it was the old company before we bought out. Because then
I'm
I was
sorry.
In charge of the Linux box, and I made sure I could SSH. Pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And the good Linux news, though, is that I have a friend of mine at work who I have been, I have introduced him to Frozen Bubble.
And now he doesn't get any work done.
And I have created an addict. Actually, I've created two addicts. He likes to play the Frozen Bubble. He's kind of stuck on that. Introduced him to it on a Nopix disc, by the way. Nopix 3.4, which I believe is the latest one. Really nice. Check that sucker out. Anyway, so he's addicted to this Frozen Bubble game, and he likes to play it. And I burned him a Nopix disc, and he took it home, and he showed his wife. And his wife was playing the games on the Nopix disc and found a game called, I think it's called K-Molecule.
Yes, I've played that. That's really good.
I've tried that one.
That's like Sokoban.
Something like that. Yeah, this
where you got to push the molecules together in a little maze.
You make
there's
them
only one way that you can do it.
That's right. And she is stuck on that. She was so stuck on that that she's been harassing him all week. And he finally went home and installed Fedora. He was Pogo Linux that they gave up. Fedora Core 1, Pogo Linux gave up. I gave him some CDs a while back. He installed it all by himself on his computer in a dual boot configuration.
Ooh.
And got it working.
Dual boot
so
with what? Slackware?
Yeah.
Debian?
Windows ME, I think.
Oh. It couldn't get any worse.
Yeah, I know.
You know? It's like Fedora.
Actually, I have a friend who did the same thing.
He did it all by himself and got it working, and he's, you know.
Yeah, I think he called me like three times for the whole time. But he's doing the same thing. He's got Fedora Core 1, I think.
Yep.
Is what he's running. And ME.
Yep.
He called me up last night. He's got one CD burning software that he needs, that he loves over on Windows side, that he's actually calls me up trying to get this working under Wine.
Wow.
And strangely enough, even though he's a relative newbie on it, he already had most everything he needed in place. He just wanted to know if it was like safe to copy some of these DLLs that it was streaming for.
Cool.
From the Windows side over to the Linux side. I was like, yeah, I'll give it a try, you know. I've never had any luck with Wine myself, and I really don't have any need for it either. I've gotten like Notepad to run in, and I think that's about it.
We didn't get Link's father-in-law's baseball game to run in.
No, we tried that. We tried hard with that, man. We tried.
Well, I've never had any, you know, once I moved over here, I just never really had any need for it. I didn't have any specialized software in Windows that I needed it for.
Me too. Well, you know, with me, when I made the switch from Windows to Linux, I was just completely fed up. You know, I don't care if I lose some functionality or I can't play the new fancy Windows games or any of that. I want to use my computer so I can get some damn work done and do what I need to do on it. And I really didn't care if I couldn't, you know, if I lost some frilly things in the transition, or if I, you know, ran into problems getting my printer working or something like that. It didn't matter at that point. But I just thought, you know, that was cool. There's another one more Linux installed to chalk up on the board. And, you know, now that he's got Fedora on there, I'll let him flounder on that for a little while, and then I'll give him some Slackware disks.
He could dual boot Fedora and Slackware then.
Yep.
You know what? Speaking of dual boot,
give us some Slackware disks today at work.
So. I was going to, you know, we were talking about are you faster than a worm, but it's already 9:39. We might as well midstream break.
Thingy.
And I'll come back and talk about being faster than a worm.
Yeah.
Faster than a speeding worm. More powerful than a Nimda virus. I don't know. No, Nimda's a worm, isn't it? Is it a virus or a worm? What's Nimda?
I forget.
It doesn't matter.
It's a Microsoft thingy. Yeah.
It's a virum or a wormus.
Wormus. I like wormus better.
I know, wormus.
All right. Due to popular request, we're going to play some more music from Derelict. Last week we had played, I'm guessing was The Fever. I didn't actually look, but that's what they're telling me. Thank you very much. So this week we're going to play Alderson. This Alderson from Derelict, and we'll catch you back up with you in like 4 minutes.
This is the Captain Long John Linux, and I be riding the high seas looking for the old buggy tub, Microsoft. And if I ever find ye arch nemesis Bill Gates, arr, I'll be breaking me wooden peg leg off on his poop deck. Arr, matey.
You should have seen Dan jump. That first arr, that was it. He was flying up the wall. What you just heard was the music of Derelict called Alderson. And that nice little pirate announcement afterwards was sent to us today by a fellow by the name of Dale Marinenko. Hope I didn't butcher your name too bad, Dale. And thank you very much for your little pirate announcement.
Pirate, 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 pirate.
That's right. For the rest of you, if you'd like to hear your own voice on the air or the internet, so to speak, please, you know, go right ahead and record something interesting and send it to us. And we'll see, you know. We'll get it on the air if at all possible. Always looking for something fun to do.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
More stuff coming, though. Definitely.
That's right, because you're working on some stuff,
I'm
right?
I'm working on some stuff. I hope to have it by next week.
You hope to have it by next
week. Hope to have it by next week.
I take it what I sent you wasn't too badly recorded.
No, it was fine. I already integrated some of it already.
Cool. All right.
I already integrated some of it already. No, I
couldn't get the one already, down the way I wanted.
Was it already or already?
Yeah, man. ALR. Arr!
Go ahead, jump over you again, Dad.
You know what? I had asked if you were faster than a worm.
Yes.
If any of you have read my blog this past week,
yes.
I had another adventure with my dad. And two things. I mean, the one thing is, I don't know, he's fighting the use of Linux tooth and nail.
Right.
For some reason. I don't know why. But
he must be in the same club that the most of the people I work with are in.
Whenever there's a little glitch or something on the Linux box, he calls it to my attention. Now, regardless of the fact that the damn thing has been running like a rock ever since I put it in, you know, when there's something a little askew, he's got to call my attention to it. And a little askew this time was the fact that it locked up hard and crashed. It wouldn't come back up. Well, technically, it didn't lock up hard and crash. What had happened was, and what he said to me was, your indestructible Linux took a dump again, you know, died again. I'm like, well, you know, there's only one way that this could have happened, a hardware failure. And sure enough, it was a hardware failure. When the machine booted up, it would not find a hard drive. So not Linux problem, hardware failure.
Uh-huh.
So I pulled it apart, reseated all the cables, and came up running like a top. No problem, not a problem at all. Linux running great. Speedy, fast, it looked beautiful. Made my heart go, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a crisp desktop, beautiful colors. It's so nice and clean. And it just sends shivers down my spine. But then, he also admitted he was having problems with his Windows 2K machine. And this is funny. And, he, you know, two things about this is he came up with, I think, a really good idea, interesting idea. I'm not sure whether it's good or not. Okay, the first thing is, it seems he's moving towards dual booting his Windows box with two versions, I think, of Windows 2K or Windows 2K and Windows 98, so that when one version gets hosed and riddled with viruses, can switch over to the other version and reload Windows, the original, you know, the first version that got hosed. And then
why,
when that version
why,
gets
why,
hosed,
why?
Yeah, right. So that's one of the most interesting uses of a dual boot system I have seen. Use it from when your main system goes down, then you don't lose anywhere because you could boot. Now, the only downside I can see of that is if something riddles itself through the other partition, you know, leaves.
Oh, that'd be cute, yeah.
But, now, this is interesting because he has tried to prevent his machine. He's tried everything to prevent his machine from getting affected, running antivirus, running anti-spyware programs, all sorts of stuff. He has even resorted to, when Juno fires up, that if he sees the hard drive going or if he sees the modem light going, he hits the modem power button on the modem to shut it off to hopefully not download a worm. Or if he sees that when he opens up an email or something, the hard drive starts spinning, he'll shut the computer off. That's what he'll do to try and prevent it. And this is what happened the last time. He shut the Windows 2K off in the middle of something getting unleashed, and it destroyed his operating system. He couldn't boot anymore.
Oh, man.
So I said to him as I was driving, I said, you know what? You're fighting a losing battle. It's a waste of time. You're not going to stop it. You have downloaded the patches, you have antivirus kept up to date all the time, the spyware, and still your machine gets infected, still your machine takes a dump, and you're on a dial-up connection. So it's, you know, forget it. you should just run the Linux box.
Right.
You will not have these problems. I will give you an email account. I don't have problems. You can have use the email for whatever you want.
Yeah.
I already provide him with a dial-up connection, but just it's a freaking waste of time. You know, and I just sitting in the office yesterday, you know, somebody came in, they wanted, you know, one of the athletic department teams, they have a booster club and they wanted their website on our site.
Right.
You know, put something together. I was talking about, and right at the end of the conversation, you know, we're done discussing this, she turns to me and says, so, you know, what do you recommend that we're looking to get a new computer? What do you recommend? I said, I wholeheartedly endorse Apple. Do not buy a PC. Unless you're going to put Linux or FreeBSD or something on there, do not buy a PC. And the reason why is because their system doesn't boot anymore. You know? And all this stuff.
And now that you mention it, you know what's really hysterical? Over the last couple of weeks, I've heard several times people using that same excuse for buying a new computer. They're going to buy a new computer because the one that they have is all infected with viruses and
stuff. Doesn't work anymore.
Is that the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard in your life? When my father-in-law's computer broke down and I had to install Linux on his computer, he wanted to buy a new hard drive. Because his Windows was all infected. Are you sure we don't need a new hard drive? Maybe I should just get one anyway, just to make sure. I'm sure. You know what I mean? But anyway, continue on. I just, it's funny because I've heard that several times now.
That's obscene. And what's interesting is you're constantly hearing how hard it is for a general user to run Linux. Well, you know what? It's even harder to run Windows.
Yeah.
Because sure, it might come installed, but damn it, you're going to have to be wiping it out or calling
on a regular basis.
Yeah,
and it's definitely. Like, I'm getting more and more calls every day. People needing help fixing their systems. And there's people who don't understand that their system's screwed up. They just like, well, it's getting slower. They're like, I don't understand why my system's so slow.
They say, it's getting slower and slower. This morning, I got called to fix a computer, an XP computer. It's 1.1 gigahertz XP home edition, 128 mega RAM, 10 gig hard drive, something like that. It's so slow, I can't even log on. I've been waiting for 20 minutes for the Novell logon to complete. 20 minutes. 20 minutes somebody was getting paid to wait for a logon. So I go over there and check this out. This XP machine, first of all, it's got everything, all the bells and whistles turned on, you know, the little drop shadows and this stuff, and then the crayon, Crayola looking, you know,
that, all the crap windows, that slows it down.
Desktop.
Yeah, all of that desktop crap that slows it down, and the little springy menus and the transparent things and all that. So I shut all that crap off.
You know what's interesting?
What's that?
All that happy horse shit on OS X
doesn't
slow it down. Like, I got stuff.
Yeah,
know,
but it's horrible under XP.
The transparent windows and just crap flying all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And switching desktop.
Well, I mean, you
and
put
the
that
only time I see it, see anything get a little glitchy is if I'm playing music and I switch a desktop and the transition does something funky like a spiral or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it just it hits the music just a little bit, just a little bit. But that's it. Everything else runs fine.
Man, XP is horrible with that. If you don't turn all that crap off, it just runs like a dog. And then after I shut all that stuff off, it still wasn't going very fast. You know why? Because, and this is like every sysadmin's nightmare. Somebody had put every freaking downloadable program that accesses the internet on there that they could find. There was Yahoo Instant Messenger, ICQ, and AIM running, Weatherbug, which is like the bane of existence. You know what I mean? Do not use that crap. And there were like four other Yahoo notifiers. That is, there was an email notifier. There was a thingy that attached itself to your taskbar. There was one that attached itself to your browser. And something else I'm forgetting. And there's like four other programs. There was a, a login manager for AOL, CompuServe, and a whole bunch of, it's like a handful of programs, right? That were all running. Most of them were already
700 pieces of spyware.
Was that the WebShots desktop?
I don't know. No, but there was a internet time profiler thing. Like it synchronized the time over the internet. What the hell is this? Some kind of calendar app or some kind of internet time? Anyway, that was another one that was on there.
And it has this. I know what you're.
Yeah, it's like a little down in the taskbar, a little calendar looking thingy, sort of. I forget the hell it was called, but anyway,
that WebShots is like impossible.
All of this stuff, and they're like, they're wondering.
I even downloaded stuff that was supposed to take it off, and it still didn't come off.
And here's the deal: like when you reboot your computer and you first start it up, it's trying to start all of that stuff, and then they're wondering why they can't log on the damn network. Well, it's trying to start 55 applications, you know what I mean? XP is hard enough on itself trying to start up. But if you stick 55 internet-enabled applications on there with it, it's no freaking wonder you can't log into the network for an hour, you know?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. Why won't they open up port 22 for you, but yet they allow the users to do all this stuff on their computer system?
They're not. They're not supposed to do that stuff.
Right.
And the policy is that you could be terminated for adding unapproved software on there. However, the only person that makes that determination is me. And when I complain about people installing software on there that they're not supposed to, nothing gets done about it. It goes in one ear and out the other.
And what happens when you lock their workstations up so they can't do that?
Oh, then I can't do that. Then all kinds of shit happens.
You can't do that.
But I told one of the managers this morning that they were paying this guy for an hour for sitting there and, you know, picking his fingernails or whatever the hell while he's fixing his computer. Oh, that's what we have to do to keep doing it? No, it's not, because none of this shit was supposed to be on there. So,
did you have to wipe it out, or did you actually?
No, I went through and uninstalled everything. It'll be a day or two, and I'll be back at it again. But at least I didn't have to reinstall. And, you know, I still have not done the XP Service Pack 2 on that computer either. I don't know if I actually will. But that's something for another day.
You know what? Speaking of applications.
Speak it, my brother.
In the forums, particularly Patrick, has just about every week posted a whole bunch of applications that we can discuss. And while I enjoy his posts and his applications, sometimes I am jealous of what he posts because I can't run the applications on my machine. Like, what was some of the more recent stuff? Like Myth TV, my set-top box, Nopix Myth.
I would love to run Myth TV, but I haven't got anything that would actually run it.
Right, I don't have the hardware capabilities. And the whole digital video editing stuff, I've tried it, and it just doesn't work. My machine's too slow. But he did post Celestia. And have you ever played around with Celestia? This is a cross-platform application. Celestia is a fantastic program. It allows you to, you know, bump around our solar system.
You drive around the solar system. Yeah.
And it runs on, I think it should run on OS X. I'm pretty sure it does. But it does Linux and Windows. And it's just a fun little application. And you can do stuff like, you can go out to different stars. I don't think they have any other planets other than what's in our solar system, the satellites that are in our solar system. And then they have, like, the Hubble Space Station and just different man-made satellites and moons. And it's just fantastic application. Great educational thing. They have a little.
I've looked at it. It's really nice.
Yeah, they have a little thing. You can run a tour, and it'll take you through all the different planets in their tour. And I think it probably isn't really that hard to script it so you can build your own tours. But it's definitely, definitely worth a look-see.
Yeah.
And I don't even think you have to compile it. It's already a binary. It does require OpenGL. So you need to have your your GL.
Which is why I don't use it, because yeah, you need to have work on my cruddy
3D acceleration card enabled in your video card for it to kind of work pretty well. But definitely, I mean, Patrick, keep posting those applications, and when we can, we'll review them.
Yeah.
when we get some hardware.
What?
When we get some hardware.
Yeah, and you know what? Post the applications and send us the hardware.
Yeah, that's it right there, yeah.
We'll definitely review it.
We'll to make
or
sure
or at least invite us over so we can watch you play with them.
Yeah.
You know what? And another thing.
Or, hey, you know, here's a thought. If you want to review something like that, do it. Review it. Get out your, you know, get out your microphone, plug it into your computer, and make a little, you know, review. Say what you think.
Accepting all types of audio.
Yeah, say what you think. Send it in here. Hell, we'll put you on. Why not? That's
damn right.
One last thing.
Even turn it into an audio
Dan
blog.
About.
That's right. Damn right.
Something, something.
And, you know, another thing that's in the news.
And another thing.
And another thing.
Okay.
Another thing, damn it. last week I switched to using Snow News. Because I tried that Magpie enabled stuff, and I didn't really like it that much.
Mm-hmm.
I still had the issue with the firewall blocking the sites, because what were we using? RSS feed or something like that?
Something.
There was feed on feeds
mm-hmm.
I looked at, but that wasn't really multi-user, and there was no kind of security system based into that.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do HT access file and put a password, which isn't so bad, but it makes it difficult to use. But then I tried what is that other one? I don't know what it was. RSS feed or something like that.
Right.
Which uses Magpie RSS. And I thought it was a little better. I used PHP, MySQL.
Mm-hmm.
Integrates in. You can have multiple users. And again, it wouldn't pull down the actual blog, a lot of the sites that I wanted to see in addition to the regular ones. Like your site, if I would click on it, it would have it integrated, your posting.
Right.
But some of them, I'd have to click on it, and it would have to actually go to the site to see it.
Right.
And, of course, it was blocked
mm-hmm.
by RIU. So then, you know, I started giving Snow News a shot, and I think it was Friday night I started using it, and I've been using it since, and I love it. I love Snow News. It's great because no matter where I am, I can see all the blogs that I want to,
right,
that I like to keep up on. Just need to refresh it every so often. I run it inside a screen. I can switch the browser I use on the fly. So when I'm at my machine, you know, remotely, I'm using links. Mm-hmm. I prefer links. Opposed to, you know, LYNX.
As opposed to links.
As opposed to links.
I don't know. I kind of like links more than I like links.
Well,
what
some
do
of them don't seem to render well.
Do you like links or links?
I don't use either.
You don't even know what they are, do you?
No, links, I do know links. What they are.
Okay. And when I'm on my machine up here, I set it to use Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I posted on my blog that Firefox helper script for the version 9
right.
to be able to open. I like to open a new window as opposed to a tab because I don't keep my Firefox open.
Mm-hmm.
My browser on a different desktop than the one I use Snow News. So I really like Snow News, and I took a lot of your blogs,
right?
And I, you know, found a lot of other blogs that I liked. That I'm interested in Feed for the Onion, which is nice because now I can read the Onion wherever I am, and not get it blocked out. But if you have any great blogs, I think you have said something about that link.
Yeah, I would love
definitely
you know, some people to send us some
send
links
us some
for
stuff.
their blogs that they read. Not necessarily ones, you know. Blogs that you do, but blogs that you're interested in reading, you know, that you find interesting, hey, maybe we would be interested as well. So send them along.
And as I was looking at my feeds today, I was looking at another posting on NewsForge, and these happen. You hear these all the time. A company, and who is it? Business Week's columnist Stephen Wildstrom. Suggests that Linux should dump the GPL. And over again, you hear companies and columnists complaining about the GPL.
Yep.
And they say it's confusing and it stifles commercial software. And personally, I don't understand why the GPL is confusing. Because I've read it.
I don't think it's very confusing.
It basically says, you know, you can use the code, you can distribute the code. Well, you have to, if you distribute the application, distribute the code. If you make changes, you need to publish your changes
mm-hmm.
when you distribute the code. And, you know, basically that's it.
Yeah.
You could do whatever you want. Now, how
you
confusing is
that? You can do whatever
you
want. You just have to share.
Right. You don't even have to share, right? If you develop an application in-house and you change the code,
yeah.
so long as you don't distribute that outside of your house,
yep.
that's it. But if you decide to distribute it, you need to distribute the documented changes
mm-hmm.
along with the source. What's so hard to understand about that?
It's not
now,
hard at
I
all.
Think it's also from my understanding is if you want to build a closed source application and make use of GPL tools, that you can link to the libraries, the GPL libraries, but you have to distribute the libraries and the source code for the libraries, but you don't have to distribute your portion. Am I right in thinking that? You can link to the libraries, but you can't include the libraries in your application. You could do it.
I heard something like that, but that's starting to sound a lot like the BSD license.
Well, the BSD license, you can do whatever the heck you want.
Pretty much.
You don't have to give back. But the GPL, you have to give back if you publish.
Yep.
And if you, but there's some clause where if you're worried about your source code being stolen or something like that, you can link to GPL libraries and still have your whatever. I think, but I could be wrong. Somebody might want to clarify that for me. And I'm pretty sure I have the right idea.
I think you do, too.
So, and the only thing I see that the companies are complaining about the GPL is because they basically, they want to keep their stuff secret.
Sure.
They don't want to be able to, not so much as giving it away, but they don't want anybody else, they want to take what other people have done, incorporate it into their stuff, and not share.
IP property is, like, huge in businesses and
yep.
stuff. You can't even, like, talk to other companies without, you know, signing, you know,
non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah,
and
non-disclosure.
They don't use the software. Shit.
Yeah. Well, see, that's a problem. People are starting to realize where this is becoming a problem now is that businesses are finally getting on the bandwagon where they're starting to realize, hey, we've heard this Linux thing over and over and over again, and it's working. You know? The Linux stuff that we got going on works. Ooh. Well, that creates a problem because when the Linux stuff works, and you want to rely on those GPL'd applications, and you want to modify them to suit your need, well, you can't charge somebody for that now, you know?
It's a new business model.
Yeah, you can't make hordes and hordes and hordes of money. I mean, there's ways to make money off of open source stuff, without a doubt.
It's in support.
Support
of software,
you know?
Not the selling
yeah,
of software.
It's in software support. That's where the money is. And, but, you know, if they're making modifications to code, that's GPL code, they got to be able to share that with other people. And I don't know.
It'll take a while before they change their ways.
They'll figure it out eventually, you know. There's far too much, you know, and I keep looking down, like Dan says, you see this on NewsForge or something like that. I keep looking on the sites that I look at, the web blogs and stuff, and I keep seeing stuff like Microsoft, and not just Microsoft, but a lot of other companies that are trying to hijack, you know, they're hijacking ideas for computer programs and stuff like that. Like
they're patenting everything.
Yeah, Microsoft right now has just patented the idea for
for sudo,
yeah. Which we've had on, you know, Linux and Unix for a long time.
Since, like, the 80s.
But, you know, they patented the idea for that. So there's going to be some kind of problem with that, I'm sure. And, you know, that kind of tactic is just nasty. I'm with the guys over in the UK with this software patenting should be banned, you know. Don't do it. Bad idea.
True.
I also think that the RIAA and MPAA should be burned at the stake, but that's beside the point.
Well, you'll get a lot of agreement there.
But the software patents are really a bad idea, and that's the reason why is because they're going to invariably they're going to award the patents to the wrong people, and they're going to those people in turn are going to charge a lot of money and stifle development on things that could be really cool if they weren't patented.
Like pseudo.
So, yeah, yeah. You know, that could develop into some wonderful thing at some point in time. But, you know, we'll never know because Microsoft holds the patent. And it'll just sit in a file somewhere and rot. But anyway, enough of that. It is 11 after.
Well.
We have, what else you got there, Dan?
Hold on a second. I think it's dynamically linking, and Archie Ricardo, I think, is backing this up on the chat that it's you can dynamically link to a library without having to open up the source code of your binary or whatever you compile to create.
That'll work.
Anyway, you know, I agree with you. It's kind of distressing to see that all this stuff is going through. And I think, once again, we're coming up upon, you know, like when I was saying to my wife a few years ago with this whole Linux thing, this was back when they were saying Linux will never be on the servers. It's just a toy thing. And I said to her, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen all overseas.
Sure.
And it's going to come flooding back in. And this whole patent thing, it's going to be the same thing. They're going to start patenting crap right and left. And overseas, they're either going to try and push this crap
they don't
overseas,
care, yeah.
And they're going to say, "The hell with you. No way." And it's not going to fly, and then it's going to come crashing back down again. Because it's just...
But it should, you know, we should, as a community, have enough brains to nip that in the bud now. You know?
Well, I think we have enough brains. The problem is we don't have enough money.
Right. Microsoft of the world. It sucks that Microsoft can lobby themselves with a money position into making sure that some judge somewhere says that, you know, oh yeah, software patents are a good idea. I defy you to find me a judge that even actually knows what software patenting is and what ramifications it would have on anything.
True. I don't disagree with you there.
You know, but you bet your hind end that Microsoft has its wallet in some judge's pocket somewhere, making sure that they vote for keeping that whole software patent program running, because that's an important thing. And that sort of thing just disgusts me. And this whole thing, every day I look and the RIAA is suing a bunch of people for... sharing music files, which may or may not be illegal, by the way, right? But the problem is that the RIAA is such a big organization that it can threaten to sue you for $1 bazillion and offer you an $11,000 settlement, and because you're nobody, you will pay the $11,000. So they're just making money hand over fist, and they have never even had to prove a damn thing yet. And that's, you know, to me, that's racketeering and extortion.
Well, this is the makeup for crappy music that they're putting out and losing money
on. It's racketeering and extortion.
Actually,
and I don't understand why anybody hasn't called them on it yet. And it just, makes me sick. I mean, I could swear today I saw something about, you know, 300 or 400 or 500 people getting, you know, new summonses.
Last week or something like that.
No, it was more today.
Oh, was it today?
There were more today. Another, 300, 400, 500, 600 people, something like that, getting... sued by the RIAA. It just disgusts me, you know. But I just wish, you know, like one of the guys is saying over here on the chat who has the dollars to call him on it, I wish somebody did. You know, let me win the damn lottery. I'll call him on it.
What's he that?
Send me money, I'll call him on it. Yeah.
But, you know,
one of these days, they're going to get somebody who actually does have money.
But isn't that the reverse of the way the legal system is supposed to work? That the burden of proof falls upon the defendant?
Falls upon the accuser.
Innocent.
Wait, I thought
guilty.
In a patent case, the burden of proof falls upon the defendant to prove that they're not violating the patent.
Always in the American legal system, it's supposed to be
right. That
you are innocent until proven guilty, which means the accuser has to prove that you are guilty. However, I have not seen an example of that in existence in my entire lifetime. Every time I have seen anything that has anything to do with the American legal system, it is indeed you are guilty unless you can pay enough money to prove that you're innocent. And that's just the way it works, whether or not they want to tell you that. But anyhow, like I said, you know, that's just that's my own
we'll
political
see what happens
rant.
When they decide to get up in arms, and hopefully, you know, Novell or IBM will still be buddy-buddy.
Well, you know what I hope is going to happen at some point in time is that, you know, they're going to, RIAA has just got, you know, they just get these names from ISPs, right? So at some point in time, they're going to come across a wealthy person's name, and they're going to issue them a subpoena, and they're going to say, you downloaded $85 billion of copyrighted music, and we'll settle with you for $10,000. And that person's going to actually have money, and they're going to say, you know what? I'll see you in court, and I hope you have proof that the music that I downloaded was actually illegal. Because there's a lot of legal ways to share, you know what I mean, to share music. There's,
we do it 24/7
yeah,
here.
There's fair use in sharing music between friends. That's perfectly legal. I can, you know, I can hand Alan my copy of whatever the hell it was, you know, the Beastie Boys. And I can say, there you go. If I can hand him the CD, I sure as hell can give him the MP3 files if I own them. You know what I mean? If I paid for the right to listen to them. What the RIAA does thinks is that just because you're on a P2P network and you're giving somebody an MP3 file, that must mean that you're giving away illegal copies of it. Well, what if you just let them download your copy and you delete the damn things?
Well,
that's
ideally, eventually they're going to wake up to the fact that people don't want to buy an entire CD.
Sure.
To get one song. People want to buy singles.
Sure. Sure.
Not only do people want to buy singles, people want to be able to look in a catalog and say, you know, I remember that song from 20 years ago, and I want to get that song.
Right.
I want to buy that song again. You know, I'd be damned if, you know, I never collected a lot of music when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some albums. You know, I have, you know, a couple cases full of albums. I'd be damned if I'm going to buy the damn things again.
Exactly.
Just to get a pristine copy because mine happened to be played on an old record player that was older than me and had a couple of nickels on it to hold a damn tone arm down. So
you already paid money.
You made your $3.99. In 1971, when I bought this album, I'm not going to give you $19 again.
Yep.
And
you
especially not going
to
give you $19 when I know damn well it cost you $1 to press the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big thing when CDs came out was, you know, oh, they're $19 now, but once everybody gets them, they're going to come down in price.
Right.
And you still go into the mall record stores, and you know, a lot of the local ones you can find better prices on. But you go into the mall record stores, and the new albums, you know, if you wanted to listen to any of this shit, but, you know, if you want to buy a new album, it's $19.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, Best Buy, you can get it for $13 or $14.99. But it's not, you know, you're looking at going, it's crap. There's one song on here that I want.
Yep.
And chances are, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be tired of the damn thing anyways. There's no other way around it, because very little music that I listen to that's new will I listen to for more than a couple weeks at a time.
Sure.
It doesn't have the staying power it doesn't have the staying power, and it doesn't have the type of music that I like to listen to anyways.
Sure.
Plus,
there are a lot of times that I have had my friends say to me, hey, Link, you got to check this group out. They're really great. And they send me a song, you know? And I'll listen to it, and I'll say, you know, a lot of times I'll say, well, you know, it sounds like shit, and I'll delete it, and that's the end of it. But there are some times I say, you know, they're really good.
Yeah.
And then I'll go out and buy the damn CD. So,
you
know,
they're getting their
money off of sharing this. For instance, the last time I did that was somebody sent me a couple MP3s from Lost Lonely Boys.
Okay.
They're pretty good. You know, mm-hmm. So why won't I like the Lost Lonely Boy? I have to let you listen to it because some of it's really good.
I don't own it.
Went out after that payday and I bought the damn CD, and you know, now I got all the rights to it and everything, but like they didn't lose any money off of that. You know what I mean?
No, they gained money. Like if I spent $19 you weren't going to spend before.
If I like the damn song, and I, you know, chances are I'll probably go out and buy the CD just so that I, you know, have it. But I don't know.
I could see both sides of the story, but then again, you know, I could see where they say. I know growing up, I had friends give me songs, you know, record a mixtape for me, record an album. And this is like a few dollars here. But then on the flip side, when you have millions of people downloading tons and tons and tons and tons of the file, I mean, it's not as easy. I mean, it's far easier
than
it used to be.
As a business, when you go, gee, there's tons of people who want this song. Maybe if I made it cheap enough for them,
but you're right.
I didn't
it's not
butcher
follow-
up a con-
it's,
you
it's,
know, butcher up
yeah,
the
it's not,
content with
not
DRM or
advantage.
Anything like that.
But do you have the Apple Store, the iTunes Store, and then Real Player Store.
Exactly. But here's the thing, and this is the one thing that I want to point out to the RIAA. You're suing these people for doing this. However, and you think that that's going to deter it. Because you're losing money. That's why they're suing these people. They think, oh, we're losing all this revenue.
We ain't gonna want
my point
buy,
is,
buy CDs. That's
my
sure.
point is that these 11-year-old girls that they're extorting money from, okay, don't have the money to go out and buy the stuff anyway and would
never do
it.
They do.
They would
Studies
never
have shown
do
what,
it.
Like, little girls are like the biggest buyers of CDs in the world.
So it was a bad example. But a lot of the people that are,
I know what you're saying.
A lot of people that are sharing these music files would never buy them to begin with.
Oh yeah,
right.
That I agree with.
They would never buy them to begin with. So you are not losing any revenue off of these people, whether they're recording, because you know if they didn't record it off the internet or get it off the internet, they'd be recording it off the radio. You know,
exactly.
Which I guess this is entirely legal to do. Go figure, right?
No, they don't like that either.
You
could use it for personal consumption.
Well, if it's if you record it off the radio and
anyways.
It's personal, why the hell can't you get it off the internet if it's personal? I don't know.
Well, because they're still making money.
RIAA, you suck.
Aren't they
That's
making
all.
No, wait.
They make money off the radio play.
When they play it on the radio, don't they make
they
some
make
kind
money
of
off
money?
Of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make money off of that, too.
The only people that don't make money in the music business are the artists themselves.
Right.
Right.
Now, you know, it's interesting.
Or very little, depending on
who was like
contract
the big hey against Napster. They allow you to come record their concert.
Right.
But they say don't distribute it, but you can record it. Which, hey, that's great. I think that if I'm going to pay $40 for a ticket, you better damn well let me. It would be nice to be able to record that concert.
I want to record a concert, and afterwards I want you to give me a personal tattoo autograph, you know?
Because, man, concerts have gotten to be so damn
but, you
expensive.
Know, I go to shows with a buddy of mine, and I'll let him remain nameless. We've been recording shows for 10 years easily.
Right, but you got to do it on the sly now, don't you?
Well,
you don't walk in with
a
big, you know, you got your microphones.
Well, no,
hey, here I come.
Well, no, when we were doing the dead shows, we did do that on it. But, you know, for all the other ones on it, we have a little tiny.
Alan walks in with a big fatty disguise, a microphone disguised as a big fatty.
No, you've got
it's an ice cream cone, that's what it is.
These microphones that are, I don't know, maybe a quarter of an inch big on it, attached to a mini disc player, which sits in a pocket. The sound quality comes out just as well. Yeah, I mean, you may have to do a little mix down at the end on it, but you know, for personal use, it's perfect. On it, we've got tons of different shows. I'm not going to go into the ones that we've recorded, and some of them you're allowed to, some of them you aren't. On it, but the artist doesn't lose any money. We're taking home a memento. We've already paid you $37 to get into the damn show.
Sure.
Now, see, you're right. And one of the things that I think is I can see if Link were to go out and buy a CD, burn a copy, and give it to me, you know, it's not really legal, so to speak. But wait. I know it's been done for years, but, you know, technically.
The only difference now
is not
a digital copy.
Right, it's not
technically,
really.
Technically, it is legal as long as I don't listen to it at the same time you do.
Right.
Well, you don't charge him for it.
Yeah.
Right, but then on the flip side, I have, really, if you go out and tape a concert and sell the bootleg, I don't have much of a problem with that because the record company isn't going to do that.
Sure.
right? Nobody else is going to do that, so that's something I can't get anywhere else. The artist isn't really going to do that. So, you know, why let something like that go away?
Because they're not, they don't feel they can make enough money off of it.
So why complain? It's a slippery slope, though. That's why we stream open source, open music,
right.
Creative Commons licensed music.
So we don't have to put up with that kind of horse crap.
There's a lot of
what I love now is if you know the bootleg areas on it, a lot of these you're seeing a lot of music coming out from like the 70s.
Right.
I'm looking at this going, somebody on the inside has to be recording, has to be releasing this stuff on it, because in the 70s you didn't have small taping equipment.
Sure.
Yeah, you had reel to reels.
No, man. You went in with that, like, that recorder that fell out of Rerun's pocket on What's Happening. That one time when he went and he bootlegged the Doobie Brothers concert, he stood up and it fell out. He had that.
But the hilarious thing is, you know, listen to these things and they're like, you know, soundboard quality stuff. And it's like 1972. And like,
sure.
I don't think that came from a guy in the audience.
Probably not.
Rerun.
I don't know. Hey, we got to get going. It's late.
Right.
26 after we've done a long show this time. It's like we get everybody in here this time, and then we just can't stop.
That's because Dan's room is clean.
That's what it is. It's clean in here.
You know, it'd be nice if iTunes supported OGG. Not iTunes, the iPod supported OGG format, but it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
That's a sucky thing.
It doesn't.
You wouldn't have that problem if you were running Linux.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to say, but the iPod, the interesting thing about it is you go out and buy an MP3 player for, like, what do they cost? $120 or something like that for a 128 meg player?
No, man, I'm poor.
You know, and it's
what, like, is it, $10 million, $15?
Yeah, you know, for like another $100 or so, you get like a 15 gig iPod. This is no brainer.
Well,
right?
If it's only $100, just let me, you know, let me get.
No, $100 more. They're like $200, but you know, it's like 128 meg or 15 gig thing. Save your money by the iPod. I only hope that they actually get the iPod to work as well with Linux a little faster. That's just my thing.
Eventually,
because you know, you either have to have an Apple or a Windows machine to run with the iPod to work really well.
Yeah,
I don't want any of those.
All right, folks.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll have something really special next week, hopefully.
Yeah.
Really special. If I get off my butt and take care of it.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Catch you next week for show number 48.
48.
48.
Full in the fleet tech show. Full in the fleet tech show.